Fourth and final hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Tuesday afternoon. Teron Davenport in studio with us. We're talking with TD. His podcast does a tremendous job of that. You need to check it out. Also, Teron and Chase on Friday nights from 6 until 8 o'clock. You guys will be in Kansas City giving coverage again this weekend like you did in Baltimore. And, of course, you also can find Teron's work at ESPN.com. In fact, you got a little shout-out from Titans controlling owner Amy Adams Strunk.
Yeah.
On Saturday night.
That's right. I'm standing on in the end zone, minding my business, and I get a tap on the shoulder. I'm like, who the heck is this? And I turn around and it's Miss Amy Adams Strunk.
And she said, move out of the way. You're in my way. I
basically
can't see.
And I just obliged to move. No, I mean, she said that, you know, she enjoyed my breakdowns. My whiteboard breakdowns. I was like, oh, she even knows what the whiteboard and everything. And then she said she's learning a lot from them. So I you know, said thank you and put my hand out to shake her hand. And then something said, nah, you need to give this nice lady a hug. So I said, give me a hug. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Wow.
Yeah. And, yeah, man, I was taken aback by that because, to be honest with you, I had never interacted with her before in my life. You know what I mean? And that's one of the things I love about this area. You know, people have asked me if I, you know, would consider going to a bigger market with Atlanta, New York. No, I'm not doing it. I plan to be here for a long time, and it's because of the support that the fans give me, the coaching staff, right? My first Saturday here, I remember like it was yesterday. It was the first game, or not game, but first practice at Nissan Stadium. I'm standing there watching the guys come out. This guy comes up to me and says, hey, man, welcome to Nashville. I like your work. I just want to introduce myself. My name is John Robinson. I'm like, what the heck? You know what I'm saying? I never had that with Howie Roseman. You know what I mean? He knew who I was, but I never had that person.
Right.
I don't plan to go anywhere. Because I love the family type atmosphere that this place has. You know what I mean? So
was it weird that she said Joe? She called you Joe Rexroad, though. Was that weird? No, I'm just kidding.
Well, I tell you, man, you always like to pee in somebody's Cheerios, man.
I brought it up. Come on.
Nah, I'm messing with you.
No, I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, appreciate you.
Because we talked about that last week, and that was cool. That you know, we talked about your video, and in fact, you did it here, and. And it was nice to see her come up and say that. I thought that was really cool.
And what was so crazy, and I'm not sitting here taking credit. Like, I'm not that guy to say, oh, well, you know, they watched my video and executed. No, I don't believe that. But what's so crazy is that I was on the same page as them. You know what I mean? Because a lot of the things that I did in the video as far as how to defend Lamar and going back to that 2012 Super Bowl, a lot of those elements as far as that double-tiered outside edge containment was there. So I thought that was cool.
Let's get Michael in here. We asked people to get involved and just talk to us about this matchup. Michael in Hendersonville, what's up?
Hey, fellas. I was actually going to talk to you about the game in Baltimore I got to witness. It was a great game to go to, if that's okay.
Yeah, go ahead. How was your experience?
Awesome. There's a few things, to be honest with you. Real quick, before I even get into the stadium, I'm taking a picture with the Johnny Unitas statue because I'm a really big Louisville fan. Obviously, he went to Louisville as well as Lamar Jackson. And this Ravens fan walks up to me and is making fun of me, laughing because he sees me wearing an Eddie George jersey. I'm like, dude, you're taking all our quarterbacks. I'm a really big Louisville fan. So, anyways, I'm telling him I'm pretty optimistic about the game. I was hoping it'd be, you know, 7-3-point game, a close game. As long as it's a close game, I'll be super excited. This guy goes on to be like, there's not a chance. It's going to be 42-17. Book it right now. The Ravens are going to win. I'm just like, oh, okay. Well, we'll see. So I get into the game, and that atmosphere was like, it was insane.
Yes.
It was bonkers. Like, those fans were going crazy. So I was pretty worried. I'm not going to lie. My biggest worry was, that they were going to take away the running game because it's the Ravens defense. And the other worry was that we weren't going to be able to stop their running game. And I mean, obviously, you guys saw what happened. It was one of the best NFL experiences, Titans experiences I've ever had, and it's making a lot of other people, not just myself, optimistic. But then you're coming to the realization you're playing the Chiefs. At the same time, like, I'm worried, but I know that they can do it if they continue to do what's gotten them to this point. So I'm extremely optimistic about this championship game for the AFC.
Unfortunately, I talked to a couple people who were there too, and they did not have great experiences with the Baltimore fans either. And I hate to hear that. I don't understand why. Why can't you just go there in another team's jersey? And as long as you're not the one being, you know, obnoxious and acting like a fool, I don't understand why you can't coexist. I don't understand why they felt the need. The people that I talked to, they weren't doing anything other than they were in Titans gear,
right?
And they were really getting verbally harassed.
I can't stand that when people do that.
I hate it.
I'll be honest with you. I guess I got a good draw because, I mean, I took a lot of what they were saying and kind of mind my business. But when Henry broke a run or that Khalif Raymond catch in the end zone, it was right in front of me. I was three rows up in the end zone, so I was standing on the seat, like, going crazy. So I'm sure they hated me, but I mean that, but to be honest with you, they were open arms. They had no idea what was going on. They literally thought that the Titans had no chance, and you could tell, and you could see it on their face. And I was more optimistic than they were. I was like, listen, guys, it's only a two possession game. It's a third quarter. And even three possession game, it's a third quarter. And they were just like, they didn't know what was going on. And but they were actually, a lot of them were nice. They were like, just go beat the Chiefs for us. I was like, well, if we play them, but they're due for a win against us because we beat them so much. So we'll see how it goes.
You going to KC?
I really want to. I'm going to take a rain check and try to make the Super Bowl if we get there. So,
okay.
So there's that.
All right. Michael, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it, guys.
I like
615-737-1025. Yeah.
Everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face, boy. And that's what happened in that game. And let me tell you something. When Khalif Raymond made that catch, well, first off, when they stopped him on that fourth and short, that daggone Jeffrey Simmons, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Oof. But when they stopped him on that, and then Arthur Smith dialed up that play action, that deep, man. You wanna talk about a quiet stadium?
Yeah, it got very quiet.
Well, I heard the popcorn I was eating crunching in my mouth. It was so quiet, man.
Well, I told Chase and our listeners on Monday. That's when I was having a gathering at the house where some of our baseball dads and their boys at the house watching it. And I gotta be honest, that's when I was like, oh, whoa.
Yeah.
This is different than what I thought it was going to be. Like, the Jonnu Smith touchdown was nice. I don't want to be Debbie Downer with it, but I also saw them go right down the field a couple years ago in Foxborough and pop them right in the mouth right out of the gates, and then it was all New England after that. So I was like, temper. I love it, but temper. But the Khalif Raymond touchdown, I was like, whoa.
Right.
Okay. This already has a totally different feel. Mm-hmm. And that's when I kind of took a different approach, you know, the rest of the way. And then the more the game went along, I was more in disbelief. Like, it's like they are really, like, they're owning Baltimore right now.
Owning the line of scrimmage.
They did. Man, they did. Gosh.
Whatever may have happened between Yonda and Simmons, you know, let's allow that to be reported out. But I'll tell you what did happen, you know, as far as on the side of playing the game. Mm-mm.
0-for-4, fourth downs.
That darn Jeffrey Simmons, I've now seen him dominate two of the best guards in football, right?
Special player.
Folding this laptop up like as if I'm putting it away? That's what he's doing to these guys in the middle, in the interior.
And the hope is he's just going to get better.
Yeah, just think once you get him in a full training camp and then a full season healthy, what he's going to be.
He still does – the thing that's crazy – like, that's a young dude. Like, he still doesn't have his grown man strength. When he gets that, Lord, have mercy, man.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I think it's safe to say he's only going to get better.
Yeah.
Which is really scary. By the way, Adam Schefter reporting that Chargers great Antonio Gates has announced his retirement. 16 seasons. Well, Congratulations, Antonio. The clock is running. 5 years from now, you'll be announced into Canton because that dude's going in first ballot.
Completely agree.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
And we'll probably learn some more members of this year's class because aren't they doing 15 this year? They're doing more because it's the NFL 100. And so they've had these reviews or reveals. Jimmy Johnson was cool.
Yeah, that was.
That was really cool.
I'm putting my annual call into my guy, Matt Miyoko, to make this case for Roger Craig, man. Man, he needs to be in the Hall of Fame. It's a crime that Roger Craig isn't it. I know it's off topic, but you mentioned Hall of Fame. That's the first thing I always think of.
It's hard to argue that one. We'll come back. More with Teron Davenport in studio. What do you think? 737-1025. Are you excited about Sunday? Are you going? We'd love to talk to you. 737-1025. More next here on ESPN 1025 The Game.
Watch your step, kid. Watch your step, kid. Watch your step. Wu-Tang.
Teron's feeling it.
We're just passengers.
Teron is feeling the
Take
hype.
This ride with me.
Derrick Henry taking the ride on ESPN.
That was showing a run back in the regular season. When he put 188 on Kansas City in the regular season.
I just don't know how – I mean, look, that was a fun game and the Titans came out on top. I don't know how much you take away from a regular season game in week 10, I guess it was. Patrick Mahomes wasn't 100%.
Well, Mecole Hartman had his get somewhere shoes on, right?
Yeah, they had some fast dudes.
Woo! Yeah,
this just in.
That's why you got to play that top-down defense, right? Top down, Kevin Byard, make sure he gets his depth, keep everything in front of him.
The botched kick.
Yeah.
Fellas. The listeners can't see what we're looking at.
I know.
But we're watching it.
There it is, that
Adam Humphrey.
Who's that guy?
Well, I don't know who he is, but he's tough as a
Who's
$5
number 10?
Is he anywhere near ready to come back?
He uses the same thing every time you ask him. He says that, you know, he's working his way back, doing the best that he can.
Because I don't understand why. I mean, they obviously think he's going to be – that he could come back. Otherwise, they would have put him on IR. But.
Well, why put him on IR?
Yeah.
I mean, you don't need the roster spot.
Right.
You know, there's no use. There's no use whatsoever.
Will we see a blocked kick? In
block
this game?
Kick. You know, that's an interesting thing that no one is talking about, right?
I know.
Because Josh Kalu did what? He got their snap down to a T, right? He got their cadence, everything down. So I want to see if that changes some of the things just as far as like how they approach the, you know, the whole relay, right? Because every one of them, you know, from the long snapper to the holder to the kicker are going to be thinking
about
that.
Of course they are.
Because it wasn't just Kalu getting in
there. He announced to the world that they had figured out when they were going to snap the ball.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean.
So what has a better chance of happening on Sunday? The Titans block a field goal or they attempt a field goal? What has a better chance of happening?
Hey, listen, man. This red zone offense, I don't know. I don't know, man.
I know.
I might have to say they block one because that daggone Ryan Tannehill, 70% completion percentage in the red zone. He had that over 70% for the regular season too. We talked about it. You know the only two other guys that have done that, right?
Yeah, I read your tweet yesterday.
Let them know. Let them know.
Drew Brees last year, Steve Young in 94.
Basically, so he's
pretty
a rare
company.
Yeah, for sure. They're humming in the red zone, though, man.
I've never seen anything like it. A team at this far in their season and a field goal in the NFL, which we see so many games come down to a field goal, that a field goal has not come into play whatsoever in this run. Like, it means nothing to them.
They haven't kicked one since, what, week 14?
I was going to say, when 15? Was the last time they attempted a field goal?
I think it was week 14. Week 14.
Well, it was the last time the Titans attempted a field goal would have been week – would have been Houston here because that's when Suckup had it blocked.
So, yeah, it was week 14,
so the third,
I believe.
Last game of the season?
Yeah, so that's week 15, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, yeah, 15.
Either way, it's a lot of games. You know what I mean? It's
5 games ago.
It's 2 postseason games, you know, where points are supposed to be at a premium.
Technically three, because we know they went into that last game of the regular season. Mike Vrabel's message was, what?
Yeah, this is a playoff
game.
It's a playoff game.
You win, you keep playing. You lose, you go home.
That's it, man. Win or go home. Go hard or go home. And they decided to go hard. That's really the bottom line. So, yeah, I think you may see a block kick, right? I think it's possible.
I'd be curious how people would answer that. What's has a better chance of happening? Titans blocking a Kansas City kick or them, the Titans, kicking, attempting a field goal? I don't know. Let's go to Michael. Michael, what's up?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. So about a couple months ago, I think it was right after the Kansas City game, we had this show had a bold prediction statement, and my bold prediction for that segment was we're going to win out on Derrick Henry winning the rushing crown. And obviously we didn't win out, but we made the playoffs, and Derrick Henry won the rushing crown. So my bold prediction for the last couple weeks of this season is going to be Derrick Henry is going to run us to a Super Bowl title, and he's going to win the Super Bowl MVP, starting with Kansas City this week. And he's going to rush for, in my opinion, I think he's going to get 200 this game.
Mm.
And then his bank account is going to get paid.
Oh, man, that thing is already
lots of zeros. Yeah,
that thing is already inflated.
Lots of zeros.
Well, yeah, but something he and I were talking about yesterday, and I think you would agree with us on this. You're gonna pay Derrick Henry. He could make the argument to be the highest paid at this point.
What Michael just said happens, they don't have a choice.
Man, you win the MVP, you know, of the Super Bowl.
Sure. I mean, it's going to.
Right. Michael, thanks for the phone call. Appreciate it. Hope you're right.
No problem.
But so think about this. So let's just look at it from an NFL standpoint. Tannehill and Derrick Henry probably are going to make more money than maybe they should, but that's the price of doing business. That's what you have to do. You're going to overpay to keep these players. But John Robinson has no choice. He has to do it. It would be foolish to let either one of them walk. But if you win a Super Bowl, none of that matters. Basically, it's no longer looked at as overpaid. It's you got a shiny trophy sitting on the shelf.
Do you understand how much a Lombardi trophy
authenticates? Oh, I thought you were going to say the words coming out of my mouth. I didn't know where you're going to channel there.
Boy, you just as good as Roger Saffold, man, as far as blocking, man.
Really?
I have to say, you know what I mean?
Then pay me.
You know, but I don't even have my – I lost my train of thought.
Okay, do this, because you've got some stats on Derrick Henry. So Michael brought up Derrick Henry's stats. Where he sits right now with his regular season rushing yards and now his playoff rushing yards for this season – there's some pretty interesting numbers on what he has the opportunity to do starting this Sunday.
Yeah, so right now he's at 1,917 rushing yards for this season, including the playoffs. Only 5 players have entered the Super Bowl with 2,000 rushing yards on the season, obviously including the playoffs. And those 5 are, well, it's only happened 5 times because Terrell Davis did it twice. Jamal Anderson has done it. Emmitt Smith did it. And Sean Alexander. Derrick Henry needs 83 yards. You see that quick, man? Yeah. Mm. 83 yards to be able to join that group of players. That's outstanding. Then there's another one. I think we discounted, you know, how much Sean Alexander did when he was in that 2005 season. There was another one with Sean Alexander that let me just bring it up here. There was another one, if you look at, where is it? So Derrick Henry finished, as we know, as a leading rusher, and obviously 1 win shy of the Super Bowl. He would be the 4th different running back to win the rushing title and reach the Super Bowl in the same season. And the guys who have done that, Sean Alexander, 2005. Terrell Davis, that daggone 1998 season was something special. Emmitt Smith, 3 times. That's pretty good company that he has the potential to join.
It's so funny that we're having this conversation because I'm watching Twitter and somebody just retweeted an old Adam Schefter tweet from 2016. Titans use 45th overall pick, which came from Rams, to select Alabama running back Derrick Henry, giving them back-to-back Heisman Trophy winners, and then reading the comments of how, why would they trade for DeMarco Murray and then draft Derrick Henry?
Mm-hmm. People don't think things out.
Yeah, I think those people probably feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And that trade, I have something coming up about that too. I stay on the lookout on ESPN.com. But that trade, when they got rid of that, you know, that first round pick,
man, the number one overall pick.
Yeah, number one pick. A lot of what you see on this offense came from that. Corey Davis, Jonnu Smith, they used to pick. Austin Johnson, you know, on the defensive side of things, LaShawn Sims. There was a Mulligan. What was the DB? Dad Gorman. He's from Southern Miss. I forget his name. Kalen Reed.
Yeah.
Kalen Reed. He's no longer on the team, but we're talking about like a six-round pick. But for the most part, that haul that he got, tip your cap to John Robinson, you know. And it's funny because you mentioned this Kevin Dodd, but the other Kevin doesn't get mentioned, Kevin Byard, you know, when you talk about his draft history. So you have to look at that dude because 4 years later, you know, after taking over, or what, 3 years after taking over, look at what's going on, right? When that team was 3-13, if I would have said, hey, you know what, a few years later, you're going to be rooting for your team in the AFC Championship, they would have laughed.
Yeah.
Well, the bottom line is they missed a lot. They whiffed a lot. And that's – if you look at teams that traditionally have been bad or at least they're in a bad patch, it's because they're drafting poorly. And the Titans were drafting poorly. The two previous GMs said that's why they lost a whole lot of football games.
Yeah, and I mean, guys get old, too, and they move on. You know, there's a lot
that
contributes.
So you have to hit.
And
by the way, it doesn't always have to be – yes, you would
you're
like to
hit
on your first – no, you're going to have misses. But you – not – his hits have not just been hits.
Home runs.
A lot of them have been like grand slams or home runs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like you said, Kevin Byard was a third round. Jayon Brown was a fourth round. I mean, A.J. Brown, second round. Derrick Henry, second round. Jeffrey Simmons, we already talked about. It looks like that is good. Rashawn Evans is a first round.
Well, let's go
big
deeper.
Thumbs up.
Jayon Brown goes down, and who has an outstanding game last week?
David Long.
A six round pick.
Yep.
You see what I'm saying?
You have to have those later picks hit, too. You do.
You have to.
Yeah, I mean, you look at his first draft, it's pretty good. John Robinson's first draft, I mean, that's where Byard is, Tajay Sharpe, Conklin, Sims. Aaron Wallace was
– Jonnu Smith, by the way.
That was
the
next
fourth
year.
Round?
Third
round.
Yeah. Remember, he had two third-round picks that year, Taywan Taylor and Jonnu Smith.
Yeah,
Taylor obviously didn't work, but Smith did. That's the thing, though.
Yeah,
one doesn't work, the other one hits big, then it's good.
Taylor doesn't work. All right, no problem. Use a free agent, low cost free agent to bring a guy in that works. Number 14,
yeah.
Khalif Raymond.
Yep.
Who's been cut how many times?
Nine
times.
Yeah, I always joke with him about his receiver coach in Denver, Coach Tyke Tolbert. I have a friend who, like, we have a mutual friend who knows a receiver coach, and he always, you know, spoke highly of Khalif. And, man, this dude's going out and balling. That route that he ran, I can't stop talking about that. That was a beautiful route.
Let me put this in perspective for a second, because you were talking about previous GMs, the two previous GMs on the Titans. The year before John Robinson got here, so 2015, there are two players from that draft class for the Titans that are still playing in the
Jarrell
league.
Jarrell Casey's one of them.
No, he wasn't drafted in 2015. I'm talking about 2015.
Oh, about the previous regime. Okay.
The Titans had seven picks. They had 10 picks in 2015. Two are in the league.
In 2015.
And Marcus Mariota's the backup.
It's not good.
Angelo Blackson is the other one.
Hmm.
But Dorial Green-Beckham, gone.
DGB.
Jeremiah Patassi, gone. Jostin Fowler, gone. David Cobb, gone. D'Antre's Mount, Andy Gaelic, Trey McBride.
Trey
gone.
McBride, that's a name for you.
Yep.
That's he bounced around a little bit after here, but I don't think he's not still in the league.
I think he's in the XFL.
Really?
If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Well, usually check CFL or an upcoming XFL. We'll take a break. Come back more with Teron Davenport on the other side of Darren, Donick, and Chase. ESPN 102.5 The Game. So something else we've been talking about, Teron, is can the defense, can Dean Pease, is he over there right now? Is he down in the cellar with the door shut right now whipping up a magic formula, a magic solution for the Chiefs like he's done the first 2 weeks? I mean, they have held the Patriots and the Ravens to 25 total points.
Mm-hmm.
If you'd have told me they were going to hold Baltimore to 12 points, I'd have laughed. I would have been on the floor laughing, and I would have been wrong. It's going to I think it's going to be extremely difficult to keep Kansas City below 20 points.
Oh, yeah.
So what is the magic potion for the Chiefs? What does Dean Pease have up his sleeve? What can this defense do to keep this going?
For me, I think what they need to do is be physical with the guys at the line of scrimmage, right? I think when Travis Kelce, now it's you got to be careful what you ask for, because that dude Travis Kelce, he has some wiggle. He has wiggle.
Well, we saw it Sunday.
You know, his releases, the way he could get off the ball, he has some wiggle. So it's going to be hard to jam him, but I would either try to do that at the line of scrimmage or at the top of the route. You have to do something to knock that timing off and make Mahomes have to try to buy a little bit more time. Now, as far as
– who makes you more nervous, Kelce or Hill?
I mean, like I said earlier, they're both – it's pick your poison. You know, you got a home run hitter, and then you have a guy, you know, who hits doubles all the time. So it's – you know, it's pick your poison. I couldn't say who would should make the defense more nervous at all. But I will say this, as I was saying, they need to get their hands on these guys. You know, whether it be at the line of scrimmage or at the top of the route, they need to be physical with them and body them a little bit.
Kelce's a big boy.
Hey, you know, you can't be scared of that.
Yeah.
You have to be physical with that. And the thing is, and Mike Vrabel made a good point when he talked about Kelce yesterday. He talked about how you see these routes like on the paper, right? You see how it's supposed to be and where it's supposed to go, but he has his own little sauce that he adds to it to make it that much more difficult. I'm telling you, Travis Kelce is a superb route runner as a tight end. So you really, really have to be physical with him and try to do things to bump him off that mark and get him away from where Patrick Mahomes expects him to be.
What has changed with what have you seen? I don't know if it's changed, but tell me, being over there all the time and around them, and in particular Mike Vrabel, what we've been critical on this show, and I've said it. We've had people call in and say, "Oh, look where they are there." No, it was that conversation was okay to have at that point
mm-hmm,
in time.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't said anything like that in a good while, for good reason, because we haven't had to, because we feel like he has progressed. And really, we can see kind of his development as a head coach. Clearly, something's also going on behind the scenes. There's a real buy-in. There's a real trust. There's something going on. Okay,
that's been there.
So nothing's changed?
It's execution.
So it's just execution.
That's really the bottom. I think that's what it is. I mean, obviously, you know, there aren't those occasional decisions that can have you scratching your head, right? Like, you know, going for it on fourth and 10 or something like that instead of kicking a field goal. Like those type of decisions, right, trying to draw pass interference, you know, on a fake punt. You're not having those mulligans, right, those hiccups. I think that's something that is probably different. You know, instead of those mulligans or hiccups, what you're having now is, okay, we're going to take the penalty twice to wipe over a minute off the clock, and we're going to have the best coach in the NFL history on the sidelines having a fit.
By the way, that rule's going to get changed, right?
Hey, it probably will,
like,
because
everybody's
Patriots
doing it now. Well, you had the Patriots do it first, and then the Titans, and now we saw it in the Green Bay. Seattle game.
Well, you know what? That's for the off season. AFC Championship right now. We need to focus on that. And I think the things that are changing, you know, like I said, it's execution, man. They're just playing better football. That's really the bottom line. As a unit, you know, offensively, defensively. And then I will say something else is changing. They're dominating the line of scrimmage.
I was going to say, so what has changed for the offensive line? We had so many discussions and not good ones, especially early on about the offensive line. So what changed?
I asked Vrabel about that yesterday. And what he said was it was naive of him to think that Taylor Lewan was just going to come back and things were going to be good.
Right.
That's self-admission.
I think a lot of people thought, and we talked about it on this show, of look, you're not just going to plug him back in there.
Yeah, I said it before he came back many times.
They didn't use him in the preseason. I mean, I understood why you wanted to give Dennis Kelly the reps because he was going to have to play, but I was also one of those, like, why would you not play him next to Saffold some? Give him some
reps. Well, even in camp.
Reps.
You know, in camp, they're not getting reps together. Saffold.
They treated Taylor as the backup, essentially.
And you know, Saffold was on that Kawhi Leonard low management program during camp, and it showed, you know, because it took him a while to get going. But once he did, oof, that left side of the offensive line is ridiculous, man.
And I'll say this about Taylor Lewan, because you know, you both know, I've been outspoken about him both in good and bad. And when I got kind of heated about him saying, I know I need to do better. And
I remember that.
He has. He has actually said the words and then he's actually done it. He's shown it with action. Now, has he gotten called for a couple penalties here and there? Sure.
It's gonna happen.
And I see it on Twitter of like, oh, Taylor. I'm like, look, he's not going to go penalty free the rest of his career.
Right, right.
But he has definitely managed it. He's gotten better. He's gotten more disciplined, and that's what they needed out of him. So I'll give him credit for that. That he listened to his own words and actually did it.
Yeah, and really the bottom line is those two start to get more in sync, and you see the blocks that they're doing. Like Taylor Lewan had a block on Dante Hightower, and he put his hands on him, and it was embarrassing. Like I would, if I was Hightower, and I'm sure when they watch film, I'm sure he was embarrassed when he saw that, because as a grown man, you don't want to get violated like that by another grown man. But that's what Lewan did. But then even in addition to that, you have Ben Jones, who's playing really good football, right? And then to the right of him, Nate Davis has really started to develop also. Remember, he missed a bunch of time in camp.
Right.
Right? And you know, let's face it, he came from University of Charlotte. Shout out to Coach Healy out there doing this thing. But he came from there, and that's a serious upgrade. You know, when you're actually going against a guy who, you know, you're going against Chris Jones as opposed to a guy who's going to be selling F-150s for a living, right? You're talking about two different type of guys. So it took him a bit to get adjusted to that. And then let's talk about Jack Conklin. Let's talk about him. Because I've been critical of Jack Conklin, right? I felt like he was a guy that they needed to move on from after the year. They obviously have not had the same you know, positive thoughts about him either. They didn't pick up his fifth-year option. Jack Conklin is someone that they strongly have to consider bringing back. Because you're looking at right side of the line, whether it be, you know, taking that step and turning and sealing the outside so that Derrick Henry could turn that corner, or be just pulling. I mean, Jack Conklin has played really good football, right? And outside of that Jacksonville game, you know, where Josh Allen owned him, this guy has been a steady performer. So all five on that offensive line have really done a great job.
Yeah, I just wonder, you know, what his price is going to be. Do they consider bringing Dennis Kelly back, you know, to be the starting right tackle, or going out and getting some? But I don't want to lose having Dennis Kelly as that versatile guy that you can plug in anywhere. Because they use him in special packages and use him, obviously, as a backup. So you don't want to lose that.
Here's the thing. If Kelly walks – all right, so they're kind of prepared for different scenarios. Mm-hmm. Let's say Conklin walks, Kelly becomes the starter. David Quesenberry becomes the Kelly, right? The quality guy that could play anywhere, right? But
he's still on the practice squad, right?
He's on the practice squad, and he's a solid player.
Sure.
He could even give you snaps at center if you want.
Right.
So he's a pretty good swing guy. But I think, you know, now Conklin has really reestablished himself as a strong part of that offensive line. But collectively, you know, all five of those guys, they are huge for
the offense. But Toronto goes back to something we've brought up. You can't re-sign everybody.
You can't, but, I mean, you could try.
Yeah, you could
right?
try.
The salary cap is going up.
Yep.
They're going to have around $55 million in space. Just got to see how it works.
Well.
Because I will say this. I won't have that whole it's impossible to do mindset because I saw that guy in Philly, Howie Roseman. Man, he worked some wonders.
Yeah.
So.
Because here's the thing. Probably $40 million of that's going to the quarterback and the running back. Give or take.
I would say, yeah, it could. Yeah.
So.
Got to figure
it
out.
You're going to lose Mariota, so that's $21 million, but you're going to have to obviously blow up. I mean, Tannehill's making virtually nothing. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be get blown out of the water. So he's actually going to make more than Mariota currently.
Yeah.
Henry's going to make a huge pay raise. You didn't bring up your boy Logan Ryan. What are you going to do with him? So at some point, there will have to be some subtractions.
Yeah, there will be some subtractions, and you're just going to have to do that cap gymnastic type of exercise and figure out a way to massage it. I mean, in some cases, you could push it back.
Delanie Walker will probably be off the books, right? Probably.
Unfortunately, yeah, that's probably likely. You know what I mean? And, you know, there are guys – man, I would hate to be that front office, right? Because – and it's a shame when you hit on so many guys, you know, and hit on trades the way John Robinson has. So, yeah, you can't sign everybody, but they're going to have to figure out how to bring back as many guys as possible. But before all that, strike while the iron's hot. You have all of them in uniform right now, and it's time to go out there and capitalize off of the decisions they've made.
That's why I don't like comparing the 70s and 80s and even the 90s, because they got to keep all those guys together. They didn't even have cap.
Yeah.
This is good. Okay, we'll just keep it going. Yep. We'll just keep bringing everybody back.
That's why you really have to salute the Patriots, you know.
No question.
Yeah.
To have this dynasty in this day and age, man. They're one of the few examples of the X's and O's superseding the Joes, man.
Yep. I agree 100%. We'll come back and put a bow on Tuesday's show. First, I want to talk to all the men out there. I've been telling you for years about my friends over at Cool Springs MD. I was just over there yesterday. Saw Dr. Jeffrey Lodge, the board-certified physician, his wife Daphne Lodge, the registered nurse, and their experienced staff. They know a lot of you men have started to seek help for hormone deficiencies and imbalances, and they have they want to improve your quality of life. That's important to them, and they've already helped a lot of you here in the Middle Tennessee area and surrounding areas with improving your immune systems, which is really important. Your energy levels, very important. Cognitive function, and so much more. They're there to connect you with the medical care you require to have a healthy and enriched life. And as we all get older, I hope you want that. I know I do. And there's no better time to achieve that healthy lifestyle than right now. Pick up the phone, dial this number, and make that appointment. Go see the good folks at Cool Springs MD. That number is 615-283-7291. That's 283-7291. You can always go to their website and learn everything you need to know about them by going to coolspringsmd.com. I said earlier that there's real pressure on the Chiefs. There's pressure on Andy Reid. There's pressure on the Chiefs because they haven't exactly been stellar in these spots. Do you buy that at all?
I think there's pressure on the Chiefs. I think it's more on Andy Reid than anyone else because, you know, when it comes to championship games, he kind of like, you know.
He's been known to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
One and five.
I think there's pressure. But, I mean, you know what? End of the day, it's a football game. These guys understand that. And they're just going to – I don't think that's going to impact the outcome. I think what's going to impact the outcome is just – you know, the ability to punch a team in the mouth and continue to punch them over and over again.
As we had our conversation with Derek Morgan before you came in studio, they were unable to punch them in the mouth early on. They were unable to jump on them like they did in Baltimore, but they were able to regroup at halftime and come out and shut them down in the second half. can they duplicate what they did in Baltimore? Can they come out and – because we talked a lot earlier in the year about how it's really affected this team negatively for them not scoring in the first half, not being able to collect any points in the first half, and they weren't able to win any games when they couldn't do that. But can you – do you think they can kind of duplicate what they did in Baltimore and Kansas City?
They're going to have to. They're going to have to. Now, I'm not saying
plan.
I'm not saying go up 14 to nothing. You know, obviously that would be ideal, but I think they're going to have to really establish early on that this is going to be a physical, backyard, brutal beatdown on both sides of the ball. They have to establish that, and that's why Derrick Henry is so important. That's why it's so important, you know, to stifle this offense on their first time going onto the field and for the Titans offense to score on the first time. And even if they don't score, still make it clear that you're going to establish Derrick Henry and you're going to go shoe to shoe and stuff the football down their throat, because that is deflating to a fan in the stadium. It's deflating to the guys on the field and the coaches dialing up the plays. So they absolutely have to do that. And the whole objective, keep that thing close, get to the second half. Oh, by the way, in the history of the league, running back-wise, Sean Alexander has the most second-half touchdowns, 15. You know who's right behind him?
In the playoffs?
No, not in the playoffs. We're just talking about in the season.
Oh.
In the season.
So he packed up a lot of touchdowns in the second half.
Yeah, he had 15. In that 05 season, Derrick Henry has 14.
I was going to say, he's gotten better as the game goes along, so I would say Derrick Henry.
Chase, you remember when it was actually this seat right here and this poor microphone, and I'm sorry, buddy, I didn't mean to do that to you, but do you remember earlier this year when I pounded the table about the importance of running the football?
Yep, I do. That was the analytics, the whole eye test conversation and running the football, establishing the run. No, I do. And look, it's worked. That's the formula. That's what's gotten them here.
Not to mention
the defense.
You two were there in Baltimore from afar. I kept saying, watching it, Lamar Jackson looks uncomfortable. The Ravens look uncomfortable trying to come from behind. They had cruised a lot of the season and been in control of games for a lot of the season. Patrick Mahomes, while he's spectacular and he's special, but he's a young quarterback just like Lamar Jackson. And I realize he had 50 touchdowns last year. And this year he got banged up a little bit. But it's not like he's got this long track record of playoff runs and this, you know, history of January football. He's still a young guy, and I do wonder how he'll handle. Now, I realize they just got down 24-0, and they came roaring back with 41 unanswered and hung a 51 spot on Houston. They outscored him 51-7 after falling behind 24-0. But I do wonder how he'll react if he gets punched in the mouth too. You know, because I thought Lamar looked out of sorts and uncomfortable. I thought the Ravens looked uncomfortable most of the game.
And that's what it is. And we have to stop just saying Lamar. It was the Ravens overall. Defensively, offensively, they were knocked off their track. You know what I mean? It was that whole team. It wasn't just Lamar. You know what I mean? And you look at, I mean, he put up 500 yards of total offense. He did a good amount of damage in the first half. So it wasn't just, I'm not trying to hear that, oh, it was garbage time. No, he was effective, but they just couldn't get the ball in the end zone.
They owned the time of possession. And,
that wasn't just Lamar, right? You know what I mean? They completely got away from the game plan. Greg Roman was forced off his block. He dialed up 59 pass attempts. This is a team that averaged 206 daggone yards on the ground. They averaged 37 attempts per game running the ball. They didn't even sniff that. So it was the offensive coordinator and the team that got knocked off track, and that was uncomfortable.
And I have two words of the reason why. Dean Pease.
Mm-hmm.
That was the big part of it. And they looked like a team that hadn't played in 3 weeks, too.
Yeah, I mean, they got off, and to your point, D-Mac, the Mark Ingram situation, you know, he wasn't himself.
Yeah.
So,
and that could have changed things. If he's healthy, then that could have changed things. But.
Yeah. So, I mean, there were different factors, you have to admit.
I think a lot of it, was they would pan, like I said, you guys were there, so I don't know how much you could see of this, and you get a different perspective when watching from home. They would pan to Lamar. You know, remember, they went 0 for 4 on fourth downs, which they have been so good in the regular season on. Yeah. But they got stuffed, and we know, especially early on, but they would pan to Lamar going to the bench, and there was a couple times he would take his helmet off and basically slam it down.
I mean, what's he supposed to do? You know, get some hubba bubba and blow bubbles?
I mean,
supposed to be upset.
Yeah, but, I mean, it looked like it was they were getting to him. I mean, clearly they were getting to him.
I'll tell you who they were getting to. It was the offensive line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's who they were getting
to. They owned the line of scrimmage, just like you said.
Dominated it.
Well, and I told him this. I don't think I told you this. I actually walked out of the stadium with Lamar. And I could look right in his eyes and tell that was a guy that just got his butt whooped. And that's how he felt.
One of 53 that got his butt whooped.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, last thing. What are you expecting on Sunday? Lay it out for us. I mean, I know you already said they beat Baltimore, they're going. So you still feel that strong today?
Look, nothing changed. Nothing changed. I feel strongly that they're going to win that game. I'm going to say something like 28-24, something along those lines. Yeah. I think they're going to keep the game close, get to that second half, and as this music is playing, closing time. Derrick Henry, he's going to play that Johnny Franco role and close it out, man. Bottom
John
line.
John Franco, wow. Hey,
I'm a you Mets guy, there. Man. I'm always getting my dudes in there, man.
John Franco. I don't know if we were going to end on that, but we did. Teron,
right.
Good to see you.
Good to see you. Good to be seen.
We'll be listening to your guys' coverage in Kansas City. Thanks for doing this.
All energy all week. Let's go.
I know. He is not lacking energy. Talking with TD, we really appreciate him stepping in here. Check out his podcast. Check out Chase and Teron Friday night and throughout the weekend. Lots of coverage here on 102.5 The Game. Have a great rest of your day. We'll be back at it tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. See you then.